Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and alongside me is Bob Finkbeiner.
Hello.
And we have our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So it's going to be a chilly 60 degrees in Florida this weekend. You guys all putting on your parkas and taking off your flip-flops and putting on your shoes?
I actually have a long sleeve shirt on down here in the basement where we're recording.
That's because there's still snow on the ground up here, actually. So my sympathies aren't necessarily extended to people in Floridians. Is that what you call them? No sympathy for the Floridians who have to bundle up a bit. So after our first week at Tri-State at the Plate, we've been pretty busy. If you're following us on the Twitter, you've noticed we've been tweeting quite a bit. Sorry for cluttering your newsfeed, but we're trying to gain some followers, and we've almost tripled our followers in the first week. We are pretty popular on there. We've been followed by Wyatt Matheson and Nick Kingham. Big thanks to those prospects. We appreciate it, boys. And we're going to have a couple updates on our articles this week. I'm going to be posting this weekend our 6 to 10 prospects for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I've also posted today a little bit of information about an interview with Pirates general manager Neil Huntington. Jason, let's go over to you. What do you have coming up?
Well, I've got the 6 to 10 prospects from the Indian system coming this week. I just posted last night a Goodyear notebook wrapping up the previous week in spring training. There'll be another one of those here in a few days when I gather up some more news and notes to send out to you. And there'll probably be something about the Indians rotation, the guys that are competing for that spot and the different outcomes that could come out of spring training on that front.
Fantastic. How about you, Bob?
I as well will have the top Tigers prospects, 6 through 10. And we just posted today a Lakeland, Florida report of all the latest news concerning Tigers in the past week or so. So we'll probably have another report about next week, same time.
So keep your eyes peeled. We got plenty of content coming out on the website. This week on the Tri-State at the Plate, we're going to be going over some spring training updates, anything new and exciting that's happening in each of our or with each of our teams. We also have a musical guest this week. We're going to give you a little listen to some local talent, some people from the Tri-State area who are fantastically talented musicians. And at the end, we're going to wrap up with a little segment we like to call Pop Up Culture. So let's get right into it. Let's start off with Jason. He's going to give us a little update on the Cleveland Indians spring training.
Well, obviously, the big news out of Cleveland was that on Monday they signed probably the biggest free agent left on the market, unless you think Kyle Loesch is a bigger free agent. But they signed Michael Bourne for 4 years, $48 million. The contract has a fifth option year if he has 550 plate appearances in that fourth year. If not, it's a club option. So it has the potential to be a 5-year, $64 million or $62 million contract. I think the Indians are done. I think this is probably going to be the last signing they have. This is the cap to their $117 million offseason. That's not a lot of money if you're the Yankees, maybe, or the Angels bringing in, you know, guys like Pujols and Hamilton in the last couple of years. But for the Indians, who I think spent $78 million total or $68 million total last year, that's a huge investment. They had the two biggest free agent contracts in franchise history with Bourne and Swisher. And they've totally revamped their lineup with those additions, as well as getting Mark Reynolds, Drew Stubbs, and Trevor Bauer, of course, and some of the bullpen arms that came in that trade. Just to touch on the Bourne signing a little, Terry Francona has made it pretty clear that Bourne will play center, Stubbs is going to play right field, Brantley's going to play left with Swisher at first, and Reynolds primarily DHing but also playing first and third. So that's going to be the defensive alignment. So guys like Ezekiel Carrera, his life just got a lot more difficult to make this club because it's not just, oh, we need a fourth outfielder and you're the only one with major league experience in camp. It's you need to beat out, well, you're not going to probably beat out Drew Stubbs, who's on the, you know, who is a major league player. So it's like, well, where does a guy like Carrera fit in? And where does a guy like Fedorov, who was named the minor league player of the year last year for the Indians. You know, what are his chances to make this team?
I might be wrong, but I believe Carrera's out of options too.
I'm pretty sure he is, yeah. You know, and Stubbs kind of takes his spot on the team, not just physically, but literally, of that speedy fourth outfielder who you hope can offer you a lot of defense, and whatever you get at the plate
is
you
gravy.
Get at the plate. Yeah. And with Stubbs, you have the potential that what you get at the plate's really good. You know, if he has a bounce back year from his 14 home runs and low batting average that he posted last year. On that note, when you look at the Indians outfield now, you've got a lot of speed. You've got Michael Bourne, who has got 257 stolen bases over the last 5 years, which is the most of anyone in the majors by 55 stolen bases. He stole 42 last year, 61 the year before that, 52 before that, and 61. So this is a guy who gets a lot of steals. You've got Stubbs, who stole 100 bases in the last 3 years. He stole 30 last year. And Brantley, who's kind of been a disappointment as far as his base stealing, but he did steal, I think it was 12 last year. But he's one of those guys that you're kind of waiting, hoping that eventually he becomes a speed threat. Power, not so much from this outfield. I think they're going to struggle as a group probably to hit 30 home runs. That would be my prediction. I mean, Stubbs has the potential to almost get that himself.
Right.
But even if he has a good year, Bourne hit a career high of 12 home runs in a season. Brantley's career high is seven.
Seven. He had six last season.
He had six last year. Brantley's got a lot of doubles pop. So, I mean, it's possible, but I just don't see that outfield hitting a lot of home runs. You do have a lot of power on the infield with Santana, Swisher, Reynolds, Kipnis, those guys. But as Jordan Bastian, the Indians beat writer, said, this outfield of Brantley, Bourne, and Stubbs, it's going to be where fly balls go to die.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. A lot of their value, it seems, is generated through defense. And that even with Michael Bourne, even with the extra power that he showcased last year, it still seemed that a lot of the industry consensus on him was that his value comes from the defense and what he's able to do on the bases. And even right. with that extra pop, it doesn't create,
right.
you know.
He's still a defensive and speedster, you know, oriented player. It's not, you don't put Michael Bourne in your lineup expecting him to drive in a bunch of runs and give you pop. You put him in the leadoff so that when he gets on, it becomes a double. And now all of a sudden you've got a runner in scoring position with your two-hole hitter up. On that note, it's going to be interesting to see how these speedy outfielders impact the Indians' rotation, which is, I think, going to be the biggest defining part of their season. Guys like Masterson and Jimenez, Myers, those guys struggled last year. They could have bounce back years. They also could struggle again. And I think it might be an interesting thing this year to see how having a speedy outfield impacts their performances, just how many runs those guys can save the team.
Yeah.
The only other thing I want to talk about is the quality of the non-roster invites this year. Last year, we were treated to the likes of Felix Pea, Ryan Spielborgs, Dan Wheeler, and it was just a spiral after that.
Don't forget Aaron Cunningham.
I guess he counts. I don't put him in that group since he was on the roster most of the year.
It was still painful
but
to watch.
Yes, it was painful. This year, we've got Dice K in camp, Ryan Rayburn, Jason Giambi was just signed, guys like Scott Kazmir we talked about last week, Matt Capps, Rich Hill, and a guy that gets forgotten because he was signed all the way back in November is Blake Wood from the Royals, who is injured, and I believe they probably transferred him to the 60-day DL here shortly. I know they transferred Tomlin recently. I'm sure they'll clear his spot off the roster as well. But those guys, the difference this year is if they make the roster, that's great. They had a good spring. In years past, those are the kind of guys that had to make the roster. And in some cases, they had to make the roster in order for the Indians to have a good year. And in some cases, they just had to make the roster.
Because, just to have a warm body there.
Right. They needed a body. In this year, if none of those guys make the roster, they'll be all right. It would obviously be better if guy like Kazmir or Daisuke could fill out the rotation. But if they don't, there's guys like Corey Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer. There's some bodies that can fill that spot.
Yeah, the Indians' success this season, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, the Indians' success doesn't seem like it's predicated on players like that. It seems like you guys need more kind of bounce-back seasons from players like Ubaldo and Justin Masterson in order to really kind of make the leap that you need to make in the Central in order to be competitive.
Right, that's exactly it. And we need most of those bounce-backs need to come from the rotation.
Yeah.
Masterson mentioned that his injury he suffered at the hands of 2011 season affected him going into last season.
Right.
So hopefully with the clean workout this offseason, he'll be better prepared.
He said that even though it was a non-throwing shoulder, that he had trouble repeating his delivery, which of course is a strange, unorthodox, hard-to-repeat delivery as it is.
To begin with.
So hopefully that is the root of the problems that he had last year. That's about all from Indians camp.
So speaking of guys who would like to see Justin Masterson not be able to repeat his delivery, let's go to Bob and see what we have going on with our Detroit Tigers prospects.
Detroit Tigers, welcome back, familiar face, Victor Martinez. As we know, he missed all 2012 season last year due to multiple surgeries on his knee. The 34-year-old, by all accounts now, has been cleared 100% to participate in camp activities, and the team expects him to have a very, very strong season. He will serve as a full-time DH, according to manager Jim Leland, but he has not ruled out the possibility that he may occasionally catch when they go to Interleague.
I love this. This is my favorite thing about this.
I doubt that, but
we're making ultimatums before camp is even started.
Yeah. Yep.
And as soon as Jim Leland said that, I knew it's going to be a couple days. And then Victor comes out and says, I can play first base or I can catch. Do you want me to pitch? Maybe I'll do that. He didn't actually say that, but I love those ultimatums. You have no idea how your roster is going to shake down. And it seems awfully brazen to say, we're not going to have Victor Martinez catch ever. We'll just stick Don Kelly back there. I would love for Don Kelly, like, you have all of your catchers are hurt, and now we have to put Don Kelly back there to catch a Justin Verlander fastball.
Especially to say that with all the problems Avila had last year.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The year before, he had a very solid year, but last year, there's a lot of doubt hanging out there about what Avila can do, and it's like, you're going to sit there with a guy like Victor Martinez, who is a very serviceable catcher. He's not a great catcher, but he's a serviceable catcher.
Yeah.
And if he can hit, you know, and Avila's struggling, really, you're gonna keep trotting Alex Avila out there, and you're not gonna consider maybe DHing Avila so he can concentrate on his struggles.
Exactly. Well,
the team did sign Brian Pena, who was with the Royals last year, as a primary backup. The former top catching prospect they had in the organization was traded last year to the Marlins in the Anibal Sanchez deal. That was Rob Brantley. The next best catching prospect they have, according to most accounts, is James McCann, but he just got to Erie last year, so I think he's a ways away from appearing in the big league game.
So we have someone to keep an eye on in Erie. James McCann.
James McCann.
Very important to Detroit.
He had a hard time in Erie, but hopefully he'll bounce back.
Speaking of Tigers catcher, where's Gerald Laird signed? That's what I want to know.
My goodness.
Gerald Laird. He's one of those guys. You're going to see Gerald Laird. He's going to be a manager in the minor league someday. Who did we see for?
Sal
Fasano.
Sal Fasano. And he is large.
Oh, large. Yes. Large and in charge of some minor league franchise.
I can tell you right now, there may be a moment this year where Gerald Laird is signed and flown into Detroit before a Justin Verlander start when Victor Martinez has been forbidden from catching.
Well, they're going to have to find someone to catch because the closing role, obviously, is a long ways from being settled upon, and it's been known that Bruce Rondon, the flame-throwing prospect, will have competition. Lefty Phil Koch, though, who we got a little bit of spot time closing last year in the playoffs, most likely will be a situational left-hander. Look for Joaquin Benoit, Al Albuquerque, who's healthy apparently, Octavio Dotel to push for that job. Also, news notes from the Tigers, Miguel Cabrera, Anibal Sanchez and Omar Infante will all be playing for Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic. Justin Verlander has said he is not going to pitch for Team USA.
Well, that's a shame.
It's a shame.
We would probably win every game that he started.
I believe Verlander said he won't pitch for Team USA. CeCe Sabathia is not pitching for Team USA. And there's another ace, American-born ace. The name's not coming right now, but Team USA is going to be their pitching crop, which could have been one of the best in the tournament.
Yeah.
Is very thin.
A little thin. They have guys, I think Jameson Talion's on their roster, so they have some younger talent down there, yeah. But they don't have established talent where
no.
Justin Verlander would just go just shove it to Team Australia.
Well, as much patriotic feel we have as American fans, I bet Tiger fans are relieved to know that Verlander's not going to pitch for Team USA yeah. after that Washington All-Star appearance last year where he basically tried to throw 110 miles per hour on every pitch. So that's welcome news.
I don't doubt that, man.
What's not welcome news is shortstop Gian Peralta being linked to the Biogenesis Clinic in South Florida for PEDs, although he swears he did not take any performance-enhancing drugs. We'll be following that story later on.
Yeah.
No comment.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled on that. I don't care about steroids. I really don't. I will never talk about them on this show. Ever. Maybe. I might. I know spring training hasn't even started yet, and I'm already making ultimatums. Let's get to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Spring training, pretty quiet week in Pittsburgh. Francisco Liriano showed up, didn't slip and break any arms, so that's always a plus. I'm really keeping an eye on the rotation this spring. We have our first three starters, and actually when I was listening to Neil Huntington speak today in that interview on 93.7 The Fan, he actually stated that, and he didn't come out and directly say it, but it sounded like the way that he phrased it, Jeff Karstens is going to be our number four starter. So right now it looks like we're running out Burnett, Wandy, James McDonald, and Jeff Karstens, and all the competition is going to be for that fifth spot. I'm really keeping my eye on Kyle McPherson. I like McPherson a lot. His arm seemed healthy. He threw a great bullpen session, ran some PFPs the beginning of the week, and manager Clint Hurdle said he was on time with everything. Stomy Pimentel, our big bounty from our Joel Hanrahan trade, he was delayed in the Dominican because of some visa issues, so we're kind of hoping he irons that out, and I hope his name ends up actually being Stomy Pimentel, and he is as old as he says he was. Mark Melison threw a bullpen session, and minor league catcher Carlos Paulino was very impressed. I don't know what that means.
Those are the kind of wonderful reports you get out of spring training.
My minor league catcher is just impressed to catch a major leaguer.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, wow.
Wow, this guy throws hard.
I mean, if he's impressed, I don't know what his level of impressiveness is. I mean, is he impressed like, this guy's Justin Verlander good all of a sudden? Or is he impressed like, this guy's better than anything that I've caught? So, I don't know. I don't know how much everyone out there values Carlos Paulino's opinion, but he's impressed.
Similarly, I saw a picture today that the plane dealer's been posting a lot of spring training photos. And there's a picture of Lou Marcin hugging Ubaldo Jimenez after a bullpen session. What preceded this? Was it so bad that Marcin's just like, it's okay. It's okay. It's early.
Or, maybe Marcin was consoling Ubaldo for admitting finally that he had some mechanical flaws last season.
It's one of those, you know, the cliche, a picture has a thousand, you know, has a
picture can say a thousand like, words canon.
What came before this? What prompted Lou Marcin to just hug Ubaldo Jimenez?
Hey, listen, maybe it was a hug of happiness. Maybe it was a great bullpen session.
It could have been. He said, maybe it was positive. You know, maybe it was, oh, that's a great first bullpen, Ubaldo. It's a new year. Put all that behind you. Here's, you know, big hug. Or maybe it was, Ubaldo.
It was a hug of, these balls are going to be leaving the park all season.
I'm
going to
have a busy year. I can't stay in the crouch all year.
Sweet Lou. The only other noise Pittsburgh made was Brandon Inge. Brandon Inge is coming to spring training with the Buccos. Love Brandon Inge. He's scrappy. I like that Brandon Inge gets the scrappy label all the time. So I always like those scrappy guys bringing him into camp. And you actually saw what he did in Oakland last year. You know, he really kind of did bring a veteran presence to the clubhouse with the Bernie lean and just kind of helping out that young roster. And Pittsburgh's going to be filled with a couple players that could probably benefit from that type of veteran leadership. So even if he's just hanging around for spring in the camp, you know, he can kind of show guys how to do things the right way. I know Keith Law would hate that because that apparently is some kind of phrase that they don't like over there. But, you know, I think bringing Brandon Inge into camp has a lot of benefits for the club.
How many positions has Brandon Inge played in his career? Is it all eight other than pitcher?
I would not be shocked if that were the correct answer to that question.
Detroit Tigers, Don Kelly has more than Brandon Inge.
Really?
That much I can guarantee. Yeah, he's.
Yeah, okay.
He's right. Don Kelly's got that all on lockdown. Well, we're going to transition. We're going to take a little intermission here. We're going to let you listen to some music from tri-state resident Tyler James. And then when we come back from the break, we're going to have our pop-up culture and wrap this thing up. So we'll see you in a few minutes.
She was a girl from a small town, like my hometown, you'd best believe. She lived her days with a southern pace. Her eyes, they shine like Rocky Mountain streams. And I have the soul of a young man, not old and wise, just like the trees.
And that's Tyler James, Whiskey Loving Dreams. Great song, great song. Not only do we have a plethora of baseball talent in the tri-state area, but we also have a lot of musical talent. So we're going to try and feature some of that talent on here as frequently as we can. Tyler James is a local musician from Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania, who currently resides in Los Angeles. He's studying for his master's degree in commercial music. He's currently working on a full-length album, as well as producing. It'll be his first solo debut album. He's had several gigs with bands in the area before he moved out west. He's heavily influenced by artists like Radiohead, The Beatles, Peter Gabriel. I tried to prompt him into Phil Collins because Phil Collins is a personal favorite of mine, but he has yet to appear on this list. And he really feels like he's matured a lot as an artist since he first started creating music, like I would assume most people would. The things you write about as an 18-year-old are probably going to be a little bit different than the things you write about as a 26-year-old.
Unless you're Taylor Swift.
That is true.
I was going to say the same thing myself.
I didn't want to jump on the Taylor Swift hating, but... Well, it was there.
I actually like Taylor Swift. So.
It's very on point. So he likes to try and move his listeners with unexpected musical and lyrical twists and turns. So you can check Tyler James out at his website, www.tylerattisonjames.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Tyler A. James. And make sure you give him a listen. Give him a little shout out. He's doing some great work. We're going to have a little segment now. Which I cleverly titled on my own, Pop-Up Culture. You guys like that little baseball tie-in there? This is what I do at work. I think of things like this.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah,
he has a gift for a turn of phrase. What can I say?
While I was eating a ham sandwich, that popped into my head. What a clever name for a segment, Pop-Up Culture.
Ham
so,
has that effect on people.
Yeah, I really do. I just...
Cured meats.
All right. So we're gonna in this segment.
Good thing was ham, not turkey, would have been falling asleep afterwards.
Yes. You know,
well, I think that's a myth, actually.
I think
that's
been
disproven.
Oh, has it really?
It's because you eat so much food. That's why.
Yeah, I think it's just sheer volume.
Yes.
So we're gonna talk about some things that are kind of culturally relevant. They may not be specifically from this exact moment, but things that have kind of affected society and baseball in particular. So this week I started reading a book called The Extra 2% by author Jonah Carey. It's been a fantastic read so far. I think I'm about 3 or 4 chapters into it. I just started, and Jonah Carey writes in a style that he gives you a lot of important information, but it doesn't ever go over your head. And the best that I can equate it to is if you've ever read the book Moneyball by Michael Lewis. When I'm reading The Extra 2%, it's almost like reading a book that's written by Michael Lewis, in that you just get so much information, but it never goes over your head.
I mean, easy to absorb.
Yes, it is. You could not be a baseball fan and you could read this, and it's a great narrative, and it's full of, you know, practical historical information. But I also found this book relevant to me personally because in 2006 I was living in Durham, North Carolina, and I had the opportunity to go to a hot stove banquet in North Carolina, where they bring the best baseball players from North Carolina in, and they all kind of have like a little celebration before spring training kicks off. And my friend Dawn, who used to work for the Durham Bulls, gets an annual invite. So she knew I was a big baseball fan, and to kind of help acclimate me to North Carolina, invited me. And I went with a little satchel of baseballs, I remember, because she told me the people that were going to be there. I walked in, had a little satchel like Alan on The Hangover, just full of baseballs. And I was sitting there. I was sitting there at this hot stove banquet, and Brian Roberts was supposed to be there, and he couldn't make it because it was after he tore up his elbow.
Shameless.
So his mom was talking, and I was looking around the room, and there's all these just famous baseball players. Joey Devine was there at the time because it was his, I think he just graduated from NC State or was getting ready to graduate after that spring semester. And I'm looking around, and I see this goatee. And I look at this goatee, and I look at the face that is attached to this goatee, and it was Paul Shuey. And I recognize Paul Shuey from across the room, and I couldn't, Paul Shuey, I saw you pitch in the World Series, Paul Shuey. So afterwards, I got Paul Shuey's autograph. He's one of my autographs in my satchel of baseballs. But while I was there, I was really struck by one of the speakers, one of the presenters there, who was the recent new owner of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And if you're not familiar with the Devil Rays, they're affiliated with their AAA affiliate, the Durham Bulls. And the new owner came and was speaking to all of the fan base in Durham who watched the Bulls to tell them kind of what his vision was. And I was so impressed with the way that he laid out a plan. I mean, from day one. And he was one of the first people to tell us, you know, we're going to change everything you know about the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And, you know, we're going to start from the bottom up and we're going to fix everything and we're going to be a competitive franchise. And at the end, I went up and talked to him and I reached into my satchel of baseballs and got him to autograph one too, because it was one of the best speeches I've ever heard, you know, someone in the baseball field give. It was fantastic. So this book has a lot of meaning to me too, because I can kind of, you know, I've been following the Rays a lot, especially since Sternberg, you know, I had a chance to actually see him speak, and that was kind of a neat, unique opportunity for me. But The Extra 2% basically is a book that tells how the Tampa Bay Rays went from a just hapless franchise, a franchise that was losing 100 games, had ruined fan attendance, support from the community, and it chronicles how Stuart Sternberg was able to take this franchise, which he looked at as a bargain instead of looking at it as a failing Major League Baseball franchise. And through the first couple chapters, it just so far has chronicled how Tampa Bay was able to bring a team into St. Pete, into the Trop. And that's kind of where I'm at right now, is right after Sternberg has assumed control of the team, and talking about the managerial team that he put in place that kind of correlated with his vision that he had for the team.
Right, and I haven't read the book, but after Andy let me know that we're going to discuss it on the podcast, I, of course, went to Amazon and checked out as much as I could on the free preview there. And the thing that I kind of came away with, because it's a thought that I've been kicking around for a little bit, talking about Moneyball. That Moneyball is a book that I pretty much read religiously every spring as baseball gears back up again. And from that, jumping to Jonah Carey's book, you know, he talks a lot about Sternberg rebuilding the franchise, basically the business aspect of what he has to do to rebuild the fan base, you know, the things he does to reinvigorate interest in the team, to actually get the team there, you know, get the fans there, all this kind of stuff. But he also, of course, touches on how they go about finding their players, you know, which is a big part of Moneyball, of course, and a big part of this sabermetric, you know, new revolution in baseball. And the thing I always think about when I think about that way of thinking about baseball is that essentially, more or less, that's been proven that over 162 games, you can find market inefficiencies. You can exploit the weaknesses that are out there. But it doesn't work out so well in the playoffs.
And that's what I was just about to mention, is this sabermetric, the Moneyball philosophy, as people like to call it, this, right. I guess, you know, using statistics to your advantage. It pans out over 162 game season. You see it with Oakland all the time. They're great over the long run.
Right.
But when it comes down to winning that series, right. And I think that's where the trade deadline really proves valuable to teams, is
sure.
you need to pick up that player that can win you that series. And that's what's kind of tough for those smaller market teams. I think about that all the time when I'm watching Tampa Bay,
right.
And Oakland.
And it's like, you know, you can assemble this team exploiting the weaknesses or the inefficiencies in the market. and you know the law of averages and everything will work out to your favor. But when you've got a seven game series, say if you make it to the World Series, or now if you have a one game playoff to make it to the next round,
yeah.
I mean, you there's no average here to play out. There's just, you know, the impact of a player, say most likely a starting pitcher, on that one game. And that's the other point I want to make, is that it seems to me, looking at the outcomes that have come from that Moneyball kind of approach to assembling a roster, that it seems to work really well for hitters and a little bit for pitchers. But the problem is that the pitching market seems to really assign the value pretty well. And so the really good pitchers are expensive.
Yeah.
And that's what you need in order to win a World Series. You know, you can have a guy that has a good ground ball ratio, and that's going to work out for you over 162 games. But when you get in that one game playoff in the wild card round, and yeah, they're hitting grounders, but they're screamers up through the infield the whole game. You know, you're playing with fire, basically, what yeah. I'm saying. And you need that starting staff to make a run, a serious, playoff run. And that's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the lesson I keep seeing. And I'm kind of waiting, I guess, for that next, like, sabermetric evolution of how to deal with that. You know, how can we exploit the pitching market? Like, the Indians tried that last year a little bit by going with a really ground ball heavy staff. Well, that didn't really work out for various reasons. Some because of the pitchers weren't performing. And, you know, just because you can have an inning of ground ball after ground ball after ground ball that nobody can get to. I mean, I've watched them last year with Masterson, just screamers back up the middle, one right after the other. So I'm just kind of looking forward to seeing how this evolves, I guess.
The other neat thing about that I guess concept or approach in baseball is, compared to the big clubs, and they do well for 162 game seasons, also we're not focusing on, there's the lack of depth. Those rich teams have those reserve players like Raul Ibanez come off the bench, and they're paying them $7-8 million a year, where those Moneyball-esque teams don't have that.
Right.
After that key guy they get all that value out of gets injured or hurt, there's no one else to replace them at that level.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a big gap to fill and a big gap to bridge in order to compete for that 3-game, 5-game, 7-game series.
Absolutely.
Well, and that goes back to a little bit, you know, what we were talking about earlier with the non-roster invites.
Right.
A lot of times those Moneyball-esque or Moneyball-style teams, small market teams that have a successful year, you can pin it to a couple of those big bets paying off.
Yeah, they rely on having to hit on that.
Right. And when you get to, say, a one-game playoff or a short series, and all of a sudden that guy goes 0-4 over 12 or 2-20, the team really has seemed like it just, the momentum has hit the skids, basically, because they were relying on that one big gamble to pay off. And when the luck runs out, the momentum kind of runs out.
The well goes dry. Well, that book is The Extra 2% by Jonah Carey. It's definitely worth a look on Amazon. I purchased mine for a penny with $3.99 shipping. Bargain shopper here. So you can get it relatively cheap, and if you're a baseball fan, if your friends are baseball fans and you guys are reading it, it's going to promote a lot of discussion about the way things are run and what you see on the field. We're going to go into our last segment before we wrap it up. We have an email coming in this week. I was excited. I saw this email come in my inbox, and my heart went a flutter. We've got someone listening, folks. This email comes to us from Dave in Carlisle, PA. Carlisle, PA. I'm not quite sure anyone know where Carlisle's at.
Out by Harrisburg, I believe.
Out by Harrisburg. It's over towards the east, huh? That yes. Part of the state. Well, Dave asks, "Hey, guys, I really enjoyed the first podcast. I was wondering how much prospects like Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer will help out their respective clubs this season. Keep up the great work." Well, thanks, Dave. We appreciate those encouraging words and your question. Let's start off with Trevor Bauer. You guys know the Indian system a little bit better than me. How do you think Trevor Bauer is going to be able to help out the big club? I'm assuming he's going to be up there at some point this season if he doesn't start out there right out.
I would believe that he'll be up there at some point. The question becomes when exactly. And again, going back to non-roster invites, that became a little cloudier this week when Dice K signed. I refuse to use his full name because I'll butcher it on the air. But when Dice K signed, he was added to a group that we've talked about before, like Scott Kazmir, Carlos Carrasco, Corey Kluber, and Bauer. When Terry Francona was asked, can Trevor Bauer pitch his way in onto the opening day roster, he responded simply, yes. So he's made it clear that if Trevor Bauer performs in spring training, he'll be on the roster. That being said, there's all sorts of service time issues, cost control issues. He's had very limited minor league experience, really. And it's hard to say how much of that played into his struggles last year when he had problems locating and he struggled in his initial outings with the Diamondbacks. So I believe Trevor Bauer will be there at some point. Some people are reporting they don't think he'll be there till August. I'm pretty sure, I think that was Peter Gammons that said that. There's other Indians press saying, people like Tony LaStoria saying that he doesn't think August is realistic, but maybe after the service time clock issue ends, that Trevor Bauer could be up sooner. Terry Francona keeps denying that any of those things are a concern, and that if Trevor Bauer can pitch in the majors, Trevor Bauer will be in the majors. I don't know what your opinion is on that, Bob.
I think with the Dice case signing that, and the contract itself, basically to me says that Bauer's going to begin in Columbus.
Right.
And I think as a result, it's going to take an injury or Bauer to be absolutely lights out, be called up any sooner than probably, I'm guessing, July. That's just my thought.
And I think when you're looking at any prospects, you know, regardless of whether they're prospects that we're covering or prospects for the team that you follow or like, you have to look at kind of the organizational approach. You know, there are a lot of clubs that will keep players down because of service time issues and because it can save them money and because they can, you know, control players longer. There are some organizations like Detroit, and they're, you know, we've talked about this before, they're very deep pockets. They don't care about service time. If they think Rick Porcello can help them out right now, they're going to bring him up. And with Pittsburgh, this email actually played out very well because Neil Huntington's interview on The Fan this morning, he was pressed about Gerrit Cole, and he said, they're going to give Gerrit Cole all the time he needs to become the best pitcher that he can be. And he mentioned Gerrit Cole's second start in AAA was in the playoffs, and when he started getting pressed in counts and when he was getting behind hitters, his approach was to just throw the ball harder.
Something Trevor Bauer's done this in the past as well.
Right. And it took him, you know, it was a very, and Neil Huntington said this outright, he said it was a great learning experience for Gerrit Cole to see, even AAA, you can't just rear back and throw the ball past these hitters. These aren't college hitters. These are some of the best players on the planet at what they do. So, you know, with Pittsburgh and Gerrit Cole, you know, Neil Huntington's made that very clear. They're going to take an approach that we're going to give Gerrit Cole all the time he needs in order to be the best pitcher that he can be. And whether that's learning to be a pitcher in AA or AAA, or if it's in the big leagues, that's where he's going to be. So,
and I think Bauer's arrival depends on how much of a leash Ubaldo Jimenez has, along with some of the other guys that are question marks, because the Indians' rotation is full of question marks. Justin Masterson could go out and win 15 games.
Or he could have a repeat of last year.
Yeah.
Ubaldo Jimenez could go out and win 20 games. Or he could have a repeat of last year. Brett Myers could throw 200 solid innings. Or
collapse.
He could collapse because he was a reliever last year and isn't ready for the workload. Zach McAllister could have a good start and a bad finish, just like last year. So how those guys perform, I think, will determine Bauer's future just as much as how Bauer performs.
Absolutely.
I think he can force his way in, but if everyone's performing, I think it would be within the Indians' organizational philosophy, like you're talking about, to leave him in Columbus to control his costs for another year. If they need him after, you know, building a lot of optimism in the offseason, if their starters are struggling, I think then he might come up sooner than you would expect.
Absolutely.
Yep, I agree.
Well, thanks a lot for that email, Dave. we're going to start wrapping it up here. A big thanks to all of our listeners. We appreciate all the downloads. I think we're up to, again, I think we had 77 downloads coming in to this week. So we really appreciate that. Thanks for all the support on Twitter. If you have any other questions, you can email us at tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. That's tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. Check out our website at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at TriStateBB, and you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TSMBaseball. We'd like to thank our musical guest this week, Tyler James, and we love listening to Whiskey, Love, and Dreams. We look forward to hearing more from him. Make sure you check him out on the Twitter, and make sure you check out his website, tylerattisonjames.com. We'll be posting content throughout this week, and we will be recording a podcast going into next week at some time, so keep your ears to the ground for that. Thanks again for all the support, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.